with a stroke.
And I had none of those symptoms, those fast symptoms. This is one of the things that's really scary. And I didn't know until I had a stroke postpartum. But for women especially, there's these more subtle signs of a stroke, like nausea. And
you would never
dizziness.
Think, I just had a baby, I'm nauseous and dizzy, I must be having a stroke.
Yeah.
Like, I would never
thought
that.
And I just thought I was sick.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where everyday people share their real life experiences and the tools they develop to move forward and live their best life. Presented by Minky Couture, I'm Michelle Scharf.
And I'm Jenny Taylor, and grateful for those Minkies. It's a rainy day here while we're recording in the studio, so it's nice to be able to be warm here in the studio and know that when I get home to my bed tonight, I will be cozy with my blanket on top of me. We love that Minky is willing to help present this podcast, not only for the warmth that they provide physically, but also just for what these blankets represent. And that's the comfort, the hug, the togetherness, that feeling that we all know when you're wrapped up in a blanket, it can symbolize so much. So go check out minkycouture.com or swing by one of their 6 showrooms here in Utah and pick yourself up a Minky today, or one for that family member or friend who just might be struggling with fill in the blank, because that Minky will be that hug and that comfort that they need. Okay, everybody, we're here today with one of my dear friends, who's one of my newer friends, Mandy Schill. Mandy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Okay, so everyone knows Mandy. Tell us a little bit about who you are, just real basic introduction, where you are professionally and personally in your life, since you're kind of new to the show.
Yeah, my name is Mandy. I work at United Way of Northern Utah, and I do a lot of different volunteerism in the community, and particularly with the American Heart Association, which I'll talk about probably more throughout the show.
Okay, and then tell us married, child, family life a little bit.
Yeah, married with a 4-year-old son. He's definitely a huge part of my story. Like, my son changed our lives for the better for both of us. Like, we thought we were really close. We thought everything was good before him, and he just like made everything more perfect.
Oh, so. I love that. We're excited to get to know a little bit more of your story today. Just really quickly, thank you for the great work you do at United Way of Northern Utah. I know you're celebrating your 90th year this year. You have won all kinds of accolades and awards as a service organization, and you don't just do great things. You help other organizations, including, you know, foundations like the one I run, the Major Brent Taylor Foundation. You help us know how to do what we're doing. And so the ripple effect of the good of United Way and service and volunteerism and pairing community members with businesses is just remarkable. So thank you to your whole team for all that you do.
Oh, thank you.
All right, let's jump in. This is the Relentlessly Resilient podcast. So our first question for you, Mandy, is what does resilience mean to you?
I think that resiliency is really just being able to pivot with life with the best attitude that you can and bounce back when hard things happen, because hard things happen for everyone.
Oh, I love that. To pivot with life with the best attitude, because sometimes I pivot, but I will make sure you know how I feel about pivoting, and it's not
That's
always
true.
The best. I love that. Being able to pivot with life with the best attitude. And then thank you also for acknowledging hard things happen to everybody. It's not exclusive to, you know, any one class of person, race of person, type of person, gender of person. It really is just by the virtue of being a person. So,
religion of person.
Fair.
There's nothing that prohibits us from having to experience the hard things.
Yeah, and not just one, but things plural. Okay, so let's jump in. Mandy, tell us a little bit about your journey. You mentioned your son, your husband, your work with the American Heart Association. Back us up in time and tell us a little about your journey.
So I had my son in November of 2019, and I mean, really up till then, I was pretty healthy. Sometimes health looks different to me now than it did pre-baby, but we had a pretty healthy pregnancy. There weren't a lot of complications, but when I was having my son, he was a big boy. He was 10 pounds.
Oh my goodness, and you're little.
C-section.
Okay,
and
wow, that is a big baby.
Yeah. But things kind of started to go a little bit haywire there. You know, after you have a baby, everybody kind of expects to hear that the mom's fine and the baby's fine. And that's just the good news. And you,
and
move
you take
on.
The like, pictures and so excited. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just what kind of people expect. And we definitely sent those messages like right after my son was born. That's what we thought, was that I was fine and my son was fine. And as the time went on a little bit, neither of those things were very true.
Oh, no.
My son went to the NICU, had just a hard time regulating his blood sugar. The nurses at McKady Hospital took such good care of him, and he was out of the NICU within a couple days and just needed a little help just starting out. But then I was diagnosed with preeclampsia after my son was born.
After he was born, not during the pregnancy.
Not during the pregnancy.
Okay, interesting.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about preeclampsia for listeners who might not be familiar.
Yeah. So it's high blood pressure is basically, and it's a really risky situation. It can lead to a lot of heart troubles. It can lead to strokes. And it did lead to a stroke for me.
Oh, so I had
in the hospital after my son was born, we were there for a week from the time we were induced till the time we went home.
Okay. That is a long time in and of itself. Michelle is a doula. I've given birth 7 times. She's attended to, I don't even know how many births.
Most women are in and out of the hospital. And I also was a trained home birth midwife.
And even for those, whether they're in a birthing center or a hospital, a week is a long time, right, Michelle? A week is a time that indicates, hey, this wasn't just business as usual. So talk us through that week and what happens next.
Yeah. So we were induced on Sunday evening. He was actually born Tuesday at like 12, 11 a.m. So just a very long labor.
So from Sunday night to Tuesday. Were you full term? Yeah. Were you right at 40 weeks? Were you under? Were you over?
I was like 39 and a half weeks.
Okay,
like,
but that's full term.
A little early because he's measuring
big. Because he's giant.
And I was like a little bit early. Like, can't have imagined how many more pounds he would have gained in those 2 days.
He's
really cute, though. He was really, like, the cutest, most beautiful baby.
So did he stay in the hospital with you the full week, but in the NICU a couple of days?
Yeah. So we thankfully, like, looking for the bright side and things, we both discharged the same day.
Okay.
So they brought him back from the NICU, and then he was, like, on, like, the unit for a little while, like, in another nursery, but, like, closer
but
to
at
us
least
and
with
less
you.
Risky.
Sure, sure.
And then it was, like, Friday night that they diagnosed with preeclampsia. It was
weird things,
like the things you don't really notice. Like my vision was a little blurry.
Yeah, Tuesday to Friday is still a long time. They must have seen some concerns to not just have already sent you home, right? But they just didn't have a diagnosis for it Wednesday, Thursday?
No, they had to be looking at it.
Yeah, I think it came on Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah, I had high blood pressure. Like all along I had high blood pressure. They were watching that, but they didn't know.
And was that before you had your baby as well?
No.
So
that's what's weird.
So come on after.
Yeah, I know it was something I was always concerned with as a pregnant person. I don't know that I thought, I have to also be concerned with it after birth.
It's just not as common, but there is postpartum preeclampsia.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't even know to be worried about it during pregnancy.
Well,
I was like, life is fine.
There's a
I'm
lot
going
to worry
gym,
about.
And I definitely was eating too many
it's your
frosties.
First baby. And
there's a lot to be worried about with childbirth and pregnancy. And
most of us don't.
We just mostly don't. It's not.
Right.
Number one, you can't prevent a lot of these things.
Sure.
And so, you know,
worrying
as long as
you're. Only do you so much good.
Right.
Yeah. Be careful. Be mindful. So, but just carry the pregnancy.
Yeah.
Okay. So by Thursday, Friday, you're getting diagnosed.
Yeah,
but they're still sending you home?
Magnesium. No, not till Sunday. I went home the following Sunday.
Got it.
So, yeah, we did a 24-hour magnesium treatment, which was like surprising.
Rough.
It was so surprising.
I have no idea what a rough magnesium treatment looks like. Sorry, I've just never.
Magnesium, when it's an IV drip, can cause a lot of, it almost feels like anxiety, a lot of shakiness, and it's just an uncomfortable ride.
Yeah. And like very slow reaction. So, like, speaking of the resiliency side of things, like one of like the saddest parts, like, and I just cried when they told me I had to have like another IV put in, that we were staying there a little longer. I was just like, I just want to go home. And I was just crying. But, and the nurses and the doctor, they were all wonderful to work with and they were so patient, but they told me I couldn't be alone with my baby while I was on this treatment, because you could drop them. You could, you know what I mean? Like, you just don't have the same responses. So then I'm sitting here like, okay, I've been a mom less than a week and I'm not allowed to hold my baby
alone. And I already can't. Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Like, it was just such a hard time, but we did that treatment. My sister's a nurse, so she was really involved. Like, she just stayed up to date on all the things. She becomes crucial in my story in about 3 weeks from that day. So yeah, we did the magnesium treatment. It got my blood pressure under control. I was actually very swollen after, like, you know, like, like when your ankles and stuff just get really swollen in pregnancy. That all happened to me after.
I was going to say, that's what I've seen, the preeclampsia in a pregnant person, where like you'll push your fingerprint in on their calf or something and it just is just
that
huge water
after
swell.
I gave birth.
Wow.
It was the craziest thing. So we had that treatment. Everything got under control. They felt safe sending me home on Sunday. We discharged on Sunday. And then it was about 3 weeks after I gave birth. I was at home. I was taking blood pressure medication every day, checking my blood pressure twice a day. That was kind of the instructions. And it was on December 20th I had a stroke, and I didn't really know what was happening. I mean, like, how would you ever know what's happening? But it was like, they think I had a TIA, like the warning stroke, around like the afternoon. So my husband had gone to work. I was home alone with my baby. I was trying to make him a bottle, and I felt like I was going to pass out. And I somehow made it to the couch, fed him his bottle, and took my blood pressure, and it read normal. So he got home. It was like 3 or 3:30 or something. And he's like, hey, just so you know, Scott, like this happened, and it was super weird. And
but your
like,
blood
but
pressure
fine.
Read normal.
Yeah, but I'm fine. It probably wouldn't have read normal before I fed the bottle.
Give or take a few minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so I was like, but it says I'm fine. So I just so you know, this is happening. Well, then we were getting ready to go on a little walk and it started to happen again and again and again, like 4 times in a row. And I was like, I'm going to pass out. I'm going to be sick. I had the baby strapped to me. I'm like, Scott, you got to get the baby off of me. I got to lay down. I got to call my sister. So
I call my sister.
I'm like, Gina, this is happening. I don't know what's happening. And she's like, you need to go to the ER right now. Like, do not go to instant care. Go to the ER. And she hung up with me and she called my mom. She's like, Mom, you got to go stay with the baby. Mandy, Scott needs to take Mandy to the ER.
Oh, my
word. And she's like, you need to go to the ER right now. Like, do not go to instant care. Go to the ER. And she hung up with me and she called my mom. She's like, Mom, you got to go stay with the baby. Mandy, Scott needs to take Mandy to the ER.
Oh, my word. How old are you, Mandy? How old are you at the time this is happening?
I was 30.
So you're 30 years old. You've had an otherwise healthy pregnancy, first pregnancy.
Yeah.
And now you're experiencing a stroke at age 30.
Yeah.
3 weeks postpartum.
It came out of the blue.
Wow.
It came out of the blue. Like, so unknown. Like, just the craziest thing. And we didn't know until we were at the hospital that I had had a stroke. They did a CT scan and they told us that that's what happened.
Did you suspect that? Did your sister suspect that with her nursing background? Or you just knew, hey, something's off, go get some help?
Yeah, she was just like, something's wrong. And a lot of things can go wrong.
Sure.
Something's wrong and a lot of things go wrong. So this isn't right and you need to go get help. And it was the CT scan that said we had a stroke. And we needed to move from Lehan Hospital up to McKady where they could treat me better. And I cried again. I was like, don't take out my IV. Guys, just honestly, like part of the worst part of it was getting so many IVs. Like my body was not taking it well. They had to keep trying again and again and again.
Yeah.
And with the magnesium, it infiltrated. So my whole arm was like bruised and awful. And so I was just like, just leave the IV in. I promise to go
straight
to the
hospital. Not to mention, you're just postpartum when your body's exhausted and hormonal and just everything's so difficult. So your mom has the baby. I imagine the baby doesn't go with you to McKady.
Yeah. So the first night I ever spent away from my child was because I went back to the hospital for a stroke.
Oh.
And you're like, oh, that's not really what we had.
It's not what
totally
I planned.
Had a plan. We're like, oh, okay, like from November until May, he'll be 6 months old and he'll be okay to spend the night with my mom. Like, no, it was like 3 weeks old and
not
the plan at all. Like, so it was rough, but we were really, really lucky that there was no deficits. I was able to kind of bounce back. I mean, as well as you can from that with a lot of anxiety and fear, but.
So let's talk about that for a second. No deficits, no physical, no lasting.
Yeah,
Tell us a little bit about that.
Wow. Yeah. Just like the big things. I could walk, I could talk, I could hold my baby.
No slurred speech. Some of the things that we think of as kind of stereotypical with a stroke.
And I had none of those symptoms, those fast symptoms. This is one of the things that's really scary. And I didn't know until I had a stroke postpartum. But for women especially, there's these more subtle signs of a stroke, like nausea. And
you would never
dizziness.
Think, I just had a baby, I'm nauseous and dizzy, I must be having a stroke.
Yeah.
Like, I would never
And I just thought
that.
I was sick. I was just like, oh, I'm sick.
I'm not well.
I'm going to pass out. And then, yeah. But my sister knew. She was like, something was wrong.
Did they attribute that to anything? Is it like a genetic condition? Is it something you're now worried about that's going to happen again if you ever have another baby or even if you're not pregnant? Or did they just say it was a total fluke and just sometimes things happen?
So that's a four-year story. Like, I actually found out some of that information. Here we
are. Okay, keep telling.
So we did a lot of tests. Like, they tested, like, do I have a heart bubble? They did an ultrasound of all my veins to see if I had a blood clot somewhere.
Mm.
Like, they tested everything. They left nothing unknown and said it was connected to postpartum and the preeclampsia I had postpartum.
Oh,
and it was really interesting when I went back in for my stroke, the nurses and the cardiologist, like the OB and the cardiologist wanted different things. Like, the nurses were like, we want to keep postpartum blood pressure low, 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 low. And the cardiologist and the neurologist, they were like, well, after a stroke, we actually want the blood pressure high to move any other.
Oh my goodness. So you've got conflicting needs in the same body.
So we went off the medication at that point and they just watched me really closely, just really closely. I did a heart rate monitor for a month, just all the tests.
How long did you stay in the hospital?
Only about 2 days.
Okay. So a lot of this follow-up was just very careful, very vigilant monitoring from home.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So in the flipping things to be an advocate for good, I worked with the American Heart Association last year. They used my story a lot. I was in the news. I was like doing all these like pieces for them. But we got the legislature to expand Medicaid so that women who qualify for Medicaid after pregnancy and during pregnancy, it expired 60 days after their child was born. Hmm. And now they have a full year. So I went back and counted. I had 20 doctor appointments for myself the year after my son was born.
Yeah. Can you imagine if your care had cut off so much? I mean, if you were a Medicaid patient and had you only had access to that immediate care, but your body still needed care. This is something, you know, in the social media world where we see people that we don't necessarily know, so we almost have a broader sphere of influence and circle of friends. I have seen in the past couple of years women who have faced really, really shocking ramifications from pregnancy, including a couple that have passed away. And I'll find myself naively thinking, oh, I thought that was something from like five generations ago. I thought that was in the 1800s on the wagon wheel, the pioneers might die in childbirth. And I think sometimes we take for granted what it takes a human body to produce another human body.
Well, and the fact is that we think of ourselves as Americans as one of the best medical care and coverage, but actually American birth and complication rates are like 37th in the world, and there's third world countries that outrank us in infant mortality and maternal mortality.
Wow.
So it's interesting. In my provider kind of mind cap setting, did you have any risk factors?
Not that we knew of. So what we found out recently, so we had decided we were going to try to have another baby. We went through a lot of, this is like last summer, we met with maternal fetal medicine. They totally established the risk. We were like, okay, this was just a fluke. The risk of another one was like 1% for another stroke or something. So we started to kind of evaluate what this would all look like. And then I did some blood work for my insurance just because I wanted them to do like a kickback to my HSA. But it's not something that's tested regularly, but I have elevated lipoprotein A, which is my genetic risk of heart disease and stroke.
Oh, interesting.
So
wow.
It's not the part of your like of your cholesterol or anything that you can control with eating right or exercise or anything. It's just totally your genetic risk.
Well, and I don't think any OB or otherwise is going to be checking that in a typical
healthy woman.
No, it's not
just woman. It's so, not part of the standard.
Yeah, it's not the standard in lab work. But just for our listeners, do you happen to know the risk factors? Some of preeclampsia in pregnancy has some of the same risk factors. Should I hit some highlights just so if anyone's listening?
Yeah, if you want to. I'm not sure off the top of my head.
And this is not medical advice, but
this is Dr. Google.
Yeah, Dr. Google and Michelle.
But at least something to be mindful
inquiring
of.
Inquiring mind.
And you've also had a lot of experience in the childbirth world.
I did.
On the other side of it,
So like high blood pressure, just, you know, elevated blood pressures can be indicative. Type 1 or 2 diabetes is another one. Obesity. Having multiple pregnancies, you had a single.
Single.
Any elevated chronic high blood pressures would tend to make your provider more aware or maybe just watch this.
Yeah.
And what they watch for is elevated liver enzymes in your urine, proteins in your urine, those kind of stuff.
Is that something that should be included in kind of my typical OB
urine
analysis?
Yes, that is included in your urine analysis and every visit.
So some of these things you would screen for but still might not pop up.
Yeah, you're typically screened whether you're at home or you choose a home birth midwife or as long as you're having a little dipstick.
At
your appointment, you're getting it. Yeah, they're looking for it. I just wanted to kind of highlight that. And this is not medical advice because I have not been practicing for a long time and I'm not a medical provider. It was a lay midwife, but I think it's important for anyone listening to this, like, wow, you know, that's kind of scary. You know, we don't want to put fear in people, but we should educate them along the way. So tell us what happens after that.
So they did do the urine sample when I was in the hospital with my son after my C-section, but that's what they did right before my magnesium treatment. So they did that's how they confirmed the preeclampsia.
Okay.
Was with the protein in the urine.
The protein in the urine. Okay.
Yeah, that was one of the things. That check was like, they're like, oh, we're going to do another urine sample. We're going to check this. They're like, yep, this, that's when they caught it. And they might have caught it a little bit sooner if we had done that, but I didn't have the blurry eyes. I just had the
There was no really reason to, yeah. So,
yeah.
So you said for about that first year, you're doing kind of the heart rate monitor. You're being very mindful,
yeah,
very careful. And then where's your physical health now besides that genetic, whatever,
yeah,
I can't remember what you called it. I'm sorry, the A something.
Like the genetic,
yeah, the long-term
risk, lipoprotein A. So the long-term, like from like the day of my stroke, like the first thing, like is they had me start taking baby aspirin every day. And then like for the rest of my life, they're like, just have that forever. And then also they recommended the Mediterranean diet. So we shifted like from low fat or fat free foods to just whole foods. So like, that's where it's like health looks different now. And we're active in a different way. It used to all be about like, can I bodybuild a certain way or whatever? Now it's like, can I run a decent amount and keep my heart healthy?
Yeah.
So like we shifted a lot. My husband too, he was right along. He's like, this is our diet then. And so we just really
awesome
tried to switch.
Yeah.
Yeah. To just a lot more of a whole food. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Mediterranean. It's actually very much the food pyramid,
mm-hmm.
like just very naturally healthy whole foods, lots of fish and healthy meats, like white meat, or vegetarian. We eat a lot more chickpeas than I ever thought I would eat in my life. But that's how we've kind of shifted things. And that's what my son's growing up with. Like, that's just kind of what
he's normal.
Is normal. Yeah.
A Mediterranean diet has been proven over and over, even in blue zones, like for longevity, it can be really helpful. But a lot of that is based on, they have whole fats that are mm-hmm. vegetable based rather than saturated.
Mm, right.
Or I think it is a saturated fat. I never get that right when I'm trying to remember the type of fat. But
the
like
olive oil type fat.
Right.
Avocado.
I always think of the olives. Yeah.
Right. Avocado,
yeah.
Olive oil. Those are healthier oils than
a
other
slab mm-hmm. of steak or a couple of Twinkies.
Anyone yeah. that bakes with me is always like, you are not adding olive oil to that cake batter. And I'm like, I am. I
yep.
never use any
How
other
does it
oil.
Taste?
I've done it
I don't
for
tell a difference.
12 years.
Okay.
Probably 20-something years. I've been doing it since
Forever.
My kids were little. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's low salt, low mm-hmm. sugar. I definitely eat more sugar. That's my weakness on the things.
Mm-hmm.
But like low salt, like we put like almost no salt in any of our meals when we're making them.
Really?
It's
really
so
natural.
Yeah, I was with my nephew at a restaurant in Texas last summer, and he's like pouring the salt on the chips, and I was just like, okay, you need to stop now.
Yeah,
like you can salt your chips on your plate. I was like, okay, that's enough salt, like you're good.
it's crazy how not naturally healthy the average American diet is. I mean, we could have a whole episode about that. Okay, so Mandy, where are you now? What does it look like for growing your family? How is your son's health? How do you worry? Are you paranoid that what if this happens again? How have you kind of built that resilience in your mindset to be able to live a meaningful, productive life, knowing that is still your genetic tendency?
Yeah. So I think that like knowing I have a genetic risk means that I can't control that. But there's a lot of other elements I can control and I can work towards. So I can try to eat healthy and I can stay active and we can teach those habits to my son. And, you know, like I don't know how it all fits in because my grandpa, he passed away of a heart attack when he was in his 50s. But like he also had been a smoker, so we didn't really like know. Like it's just like, oh, okay, like maybe that's an anomaly. We're all fine, but maybe there was more interconnection
maybe
that we don't really know about.
Sure.
Yeah, like that was 30 years ago. About 30 years ago.
Wow.
So it's just kind of just knowing that, like controlling what we can. Like I don't want to stress about it on a day to day because there's nothing I could do. If it happens again, it happens again. But I'll be way more prepared for what to watch for,
mm-hmm.
And it's not likely because it was like there was a lot in that. Like having a pregnancy is really hard on your body.
Right.
My doctor did say, as we discovered about lipoprotein A, when I turn 40, they'll start me on a high cholesterol medicine. Like
just kind of as
measure.
A default. Okay.
Yeah. They're like, that's what I'll have it. So then it's communicating with my siblings like, hey, you guys might want to know this.
Yeah, let them.
And I would like to say that the thing that you found out about is not necessarily indicative of postpartum preeclampsia.
Yeah.
Those aren't necessarily
different.
Well, they're not necessarily related, right?
Okay.
They don't really know a lot about preeclampsia. So the preeclampsia brought an awareness to you that ended up helping you find out this other risk factor that you have.
Yeah. Years
but
later.
Not necessarily yeah. causal.
It's not yeah. causal. Huh. And I think that that's a point to make.
Well,
for
I'm
those
just
listening.
Impressed. I'm impressed that you've had a stroke without, what did you call them? The
deficits.
Let's talk yeah. about that.
How severe was it? Like, yeah. I don't know.
It was
how
a did they measure small things? Stroke. I don't yeah. know.
Okay.
I was just going to say that.
Mild. We'll call it mild.
And I think the area of your brain that it affects is also part of it. So I had a blood clot in the cerebellum, which really affected my balance. So it's starting to be a little bit better, but like, especially if I'm really tired or if I get really sick, I get that same feeling. Like, it takes your brain a long time to heal. So I'll feel dizzy or I'll feel like I'm nauseous, like kind
even
of
even still
feeling.
After 4 years.
Yeah. And the doctor told me it's getting a little better. I have to get okay. really, really tired instead of a little tired.
Okay.
But like, I remember I was on a work trip. My son was only like 3 months old. Like, I don't know why I was on a work trip. I was. I took my son. I took my mom.
Oh, bless your
I was
heart.
Like, Mom, come with me on this
Bring
work
the baby.
Trip and hang out with my baby. Yes, exactly. I was like, I'm not leaving him.
No,
but
that's
like,
perfect.
It was like early on, and I was feeling like by the end of those work days, like I was really off balance and I was really tired.
Okay.
And she could tell. And
so maybe
like,
you built
like,
up a little more physical stamina, but that can still, yeah. you can still reach that point, but you don't reach it as quickly. Is that
right.
a fair way to say
and,
it? Okay.
Yeah. And I'm pretty aware of it. And I'll be like, it's time for me to slow down. Like, I need okay. to take a nap. Like, and so, and my husband knows that too. But yeah, so like, that's really been like the after effects for me is just like where it was smaller and it was really lucky. Like, we were like, oh, we had a stroke. Like, and for a long time, it took a long time for me to like be able to like even really admit it to myself. Mm. I think it was just so deja vu and just so much had been happening. And then it was like, my sister like was like, you're a stroke survivor. And I was like, what?
Wow.
I'm like, I don't really feel like I survived. Like, I just had a thing. It was almost like
episodic.
If you break a leg, like you wouldn't yeah. go around being like, I'm a broken
I'm
leg survivor.
I'm a leg survivor. Yeah.
Feel like I survived. Like, I just had a thing. It was almost like
episodic.
If you break a leg, like you wouldn't
yeah.
go around being like, I'm a broken
leg
survivor.
I'm a leg survivor. Yeah.
But it was like, and when it kind of hit, like, okay, this was pretty serious. Like, this was a stroke. Like, after the fact, it was like, oh, okay. Then it became later, once I started to feel better, once I started to feel like I was okay,
yeah.
then it was like, okay, can we leverage this to help other people
well,
and
that
spread
was,
awareness?
Okay, that was going to be my next question. If we can take just a few more minutes, let's talk about
yeah.
how your life experience, your lessons that have taught you and helped you develop and build this resilience. How are you using that? You mentioned American Heart Association and kind of some public awareness campaigns, but also maybe just in your regular workplace and sphere of influence. Let's talk about kind of how you're now taking that message out there.
Yeah. So one of my favorite quotes I found like pretty recently after my stroke was grow through what you go through. And so it just kind of became, how do I grow? How do I help people around me grow? How do I help like my family be healthier? And my one brother, he's so funny because he's just very much like, I want to live off Mountain Dew and Oreos. And so he comes
like
over.
That
and
might
I'm
not
like,
be your best bet.
Yeah. I'm like, I made a cake and one of my brothers is like, I don't really know about this, but my other brother who loves Diet Coke and Oreos, he's like, it's okay. It's still going to taste good because Mandy cooks with real sugar, like not fake sugar or things like, so just try to like spread awareness. Like even this in my family, it's just like, these are better foods for you. And
yeah,
my brother
smarter
who's like,
choices.
I'm not going to eat anything you bake. He is also though the first one to call if we're going to have a potluck or something and be like, okay, what can you have? We want to make sure we bring something you can have too.
Oh, that's kind of him. Mm. Yeah. To be
you know,
considerate
so,
of that.
So nice.
There's been some growth in my family of just like, what is truly actually healthy for us? And how can they support me? But also then they all take a few actions as well.
Right.
So that's part of it.
It's kind of set
also.
You all on a different path. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. My husband especially. And it was probably, I'm going to mess up my whole timeline. Since our son was born, probably 2 years ago or so, he actually was diagnosed with atrial fibrillation AFib.
Oh, wow.
So he was already doing, which also he has genetic connections to, but he was already eating Mediterranean. So that was an easy adjustment for him because he was already doing it.
And now it can be something you focus on together as a family, raising your son this way.
Yeah. So we're not very food centered anymore as far as that
yeah,
goes.
Yeah. And that's interesting because as a society, we largely are. We bond over food. We celebrate over food. We console over food.
Every holiday
ourselves
is
over food. Yeah.
Treats made out of sugar for to celebrate.
And we
deep fried.
That, like one of the things the doctor said right at the beginning is like, you still have to live your life. So when it's your birthday, have birthday cake.
Okay.
You know,
I was going to ask you.
Have birthday cake every single day of the week, every day of the year.
So you're not completely no sugar, none of those, but you're just mindful and more intentional.
Yeah.
I think it's a healthy way to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a good balance of things.
I have some food allergies and I have had to make some adjustments myself. There are some really good, King Arthur's makes a lot of really good non-flour bread mixes. Mm-hmm. And I do use regular sugar. If I have to add sugar to anything, I'll use the organic cane sugar that's unbleached from Costco. That's a great place to get a lot of this kind of alternate stuff. I don't like xylitol, I think it is. Monk fruit, like I'm not a fan. And I'm like, I'm not going to eat that much sugar anyway. I'm just going to enjoy it. Yeah. But I'm just going to eat the best version of it when I do.
And you just kind of, I mean, you basically train your taste buds, right?
Yeah.
Your body will crave, if you eat nothing but junk, your body will crave that junk.
I am a big Reese's egg fan. And
Reese's
I can't
peanut butter?
Yeah. Can't eat it because it has soy in it and I'm allergic to soy. Mm. But I found some alternatives that are amazing. So I just dip it in dark chocolate that doesn't have any soy. It's one of the few things that you can get that
because the soy's in the chocolate.
It's in the chocolate.
Not the peanut
butter. It's an emulsifier.
Yeah.
And so I've just had to make my own stuff. And I'm finding that I'm getting actually a lot of pleasure out of it. I don't know if you found, you know, at first it's really just challenging when you first have to take on a new way of eating.
Mm-hmm.
But then eventually.
I definitely cried.
Yes.
When they told me I was going to Mediterranean diet, I had a doctor prior. I had a lot of stomach sensitivities and I had a doctor prior who put me on this like extreme keto, like eat meat and vegetables only. And I was miserable. I was hangry.
Nothing good.
My husband was like, I'll do this with you. But he did it with me when he was with me, not all the time.
Oh, right.
So then he would go to work and eat other things. And I was like,
and you never could.
Like, I was so cranky, like all the time. Yeah. I was so angry. And so when they brought it to me, I was like, what are you guys telling me I have to do for the rest of my life? Because that was at least short term while we figured out what the sensitivities were, which, by the way, eating Mediterranean and Whole Foods avoids all those sensitivities automatically.
Right.
So another side benefit of things, looking for the bright side and opportunities. But
I love your attitude. I love your attitude.
And there's so many great recipes online. You can Pinterest it and you can get a million options. And for me, I found a lot of like personal empowerment. Like I'm really taking on what I'm putting into my body and I feel so much better than I ever have in my entire life. And I'm like, I have tried every diet in the world and some of them have been really toxic to my body and made me so sick. And now I'm finally eating healthy and it's really powerful to like eat healthy and know that you're putting good things in your body.
And there's that difference between eating healthy and worrying obsessively over what size you are, how much you weigh. This, we're talking health. I laugh when you said that, Mandy, about he had to convert from the low fat diet to just a healthy fat diet because I grew up in the 90s when there was just fat free everything.
Yeah.
Fat free cream cheese, fat free salad dressing, fat free cheese. Like what is fat free cheese if there's no fat in it?
Yeah.
And just how chemically bad for that is because that's not real.
Or they add extra sugar. And
that's not its natural. Yeah, fat free, but a billion calories. That's not its natural state in our bodies.
Yeah. I was raised on.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's not butter.
I can't believe it's not. My mom still has it. Spray butter.
Yeah.
Do you have the spray version?
Well, my mom had the
version. The big margin tub.
The margin tub. And then also Country Crock, which is also not butter.
Country Crock we had.
Yep.
And I think my dad has horrible heart disease.
Because we thought that was better for us than butter because butter was so fatty, but it's a real fat.
Right.
Like a natural.
Yeah.
Right.
And my mom would always make my dad breakfast and it was always eggs, potatoes and bacon and whatnot. I just think I'm like, of course he has heart disease. But I look at myself and I was so worried about aging like them and I'm not aging like them at all.
Yeah.
And the difference is I'm like, I'm not afraid of eating eggs. I eat eggs.
Right. Right. It's not that I can't ever have XYZ.
And I have potatoes, bacon, and eggs once a week on usually Saturday or Sunday.
Kind of a weekend brunch.
It's a weekend kind of brunch, like kind of special occasion. But, you know, I'm frying the eggs not in, even butter. Sometimes I'll add a pat of butter, but I'm doing it in olive oil.
Yeah.
So just those little
healthier choices
make a big difference.
I have to remember if I'm making something with butter to buy butter, because it's not a staple in my house.
Yeah.
It's not something we always have around.
Yeah.
Really?
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I was
it's
like,
not the
I
healthiest fat. It's an animal
bread
fat.
From my son's teacher. She makes sourdough bread on the side, his childcare teacher. And I buy it and I bring it to work because sourdough bread's really good for you. It has like three ingredients in it. But I was like, somebody's like, I'm going to go look for some butter. I'm like, oh, I didn't bring everybody butter to go with the bread because I don't eat butter.
Because it's not on your, it's not on your norm.
I'm like, I brought some jam. Do you want some jam?
I love
some fresh jam.
I'm going to say
sourdough grilled cheese.
You sound like you're a sweet. A sweet preference eater. I'm a savory preference eater.
all
the
food. This is so random. We were at a chamber event at Cafe Molise downtown.
Oh, I love that place.
Their balsamic vinegar is next level. I don't know what is different about it, but it was better than any other balsamic vinegar I've had in my life.
Yeah.
I need it by the bucket.
Like, yeah, just bring it on.
I wonder what they use down there. It's amazing.
Yeah, their balsamic vinegar with their bread was so good. I was
had me at bread. Back up.
Well, I love this conversation, and I'm so happy for you that, you know, I hate saying a stroke was small. It just seems so weird. I actually had a grandson that suffered from a hemorrhagic stroke in December, and it's going to be a long road of recovery. So I'm really grateful that for you, it was uneventful in the fact that it didn't cause you any long-term
damage. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were able to get a clue into your health and
make
your
changes,
risk in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. All the years later. It's funny how it just kind of keeps uncovering and keeps, you know, like how we just keep trying to decide. And then it becomes now, we still want to expand our family maybe someday, but like that's going to look different.
Yeah.
Right. Do you not want to have another baby?
No.
It's
like we do. Like we really do want to like that.
But you don't want to physically carry the baby because medically
it's the bright side of things. Like we're choosing to take care of me and keep me here for all the children, but
to raise them.
Like so we're trying to figure that out. It's still pretty new, but like there's babies who need homes and we'd be a really good home for somebody else.
You
like,
would be a wonderful home.
Oh,
and we've done some beautiful stories on adoption.
The lipoprotein A news, like it's like really new. Like we found this out in like January, February.
Oh, so
like
you're still kind of adjusting to that.
So,
that wasn't right
where
away.
Where we're at in our journey now is like, let's just celebrate what we have. Let's celebrate the boy we have. Let's celebrate each other. Let's celebrate
the health you have. Well, and I love your attitude. I love that so many times you have said, we're choosing to see the bright side. We're choosing to look at it this way. We're choosing to be okay with that. And that shows an effort and an intentionality that is such a part of resilience, because I think oftentimes people look from the outside and say, oh, that person is so resilient, as if it was just effortless resilience.
Yeah.
But you've mentioned
really
so many. Yes, you've chosen and you're sticking with those choices and you're working through the choices. And I just commend you for that. I'm so grateful that we know each other. And again, I'm grateful for all the work you continue to do, not just with your own health and your own, you know, personal sphere, but again, United Way of Northern Utah, 90 years of helping people, of helping organizations, of helping nonprofits, of connecting those with needs with those who might be able to help meet those needs, and just grateful that you have the health, but also the determination to do that. So thank you for joining us today. Thanks for tuning in. I hope, Mandy, you'll help me get some more of our Women in Business Chamber of Commerce friends from Weber County to come share their stories, because like you said at the very beginning, we all have stories of hard things we've faced and overcome and we're still working through. And those stories can be so uplifting and motivating. So thanks for being willing to share.
Yeah,
of course. Thank you
for coming on. What an amazing story and a treat to hear from you. I love the United Way. I also have a place in my heart for the American Heart Association.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you like what you've heard today, you can subscribe for free to the podcast on any platform that you listen to your podcast on. And if you can, please think about giving us a rating and a review. It really helps us show up in those search engines. If you know someone you know who's endured some hard things in their life, you see their resiliency shining through, go ahead and reach out to the show. On Facebook or Instagram, there's a little calendar link on either one. You can click on the button and set up a time to interview with me and see if it's a good fit for our show. Whether it's you personally or somebody that you know, Please talk to them first, though. I don't want to be making a cold call. Anyway, thank you for coming on our show today, Mandy. We really appreciate it.
We do. And thanks to our great producer, Kellyanne Halverson, to our presenting sponsor, Minky Couture, and whatever you do today. Remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles other people are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day, everybody.